Hey everyone, my name is Bryce Rankins, and you're listening to episode 11 of Sneaky Geek. Okay, so last week was Bakersfield Comic Con.
Indeed it was.
And we went around, we interviewed a few people, and we had a good conversation with Scott Joseph.
Fuzzy?
Yeah, Fuzzy Joseph. Do you know much about Fuzzy's comic?
I have not read his comic yet.
Sorry, Fuzzy. I bought
it at the show, but since that was right before Thanksgiving break, I've been busy doing dad stuff and Thanksgiving stuff.
Yep.
So it's on the pile, and hopefully I'll get to it within the next week or two.
Cool. We talked to Fuzzy a little bit about self-publishing and the various hiccups and problems and pitfalls that can come with that, as well as some of the best parts about being a self-published comic book artist. So here it is.
Hi, guys. This is Fuzzy Joseph. I'm the artist writer for The War and Hope. And I like learning about the people I draw, though. I think that's important.
Yeah.
And the people I draw for or just that show up. John. It is John.
Yes.
Oh, got it right. That's that was lucky. But you know, because I've been drawing for you for years now.
Years.
We met at my first Bakersfield Comic Con. You were Two-Face then.
Yeah.
This is before Chris, little Chris, or you know him as probably Big Chris. Which is the funny part. Went to the barber college.
Yeah, he was there that time too, and I was Two-Faced.
Yeah. It's a small world.
That was two, three years ago? Yeah.
Yeah. So I've only been doing the shows for probably about 3 years. 3 years. I've only been doing the comics for about 3 years. And the current series, The War and Hope, has only been going on for about 2 years. You have a first issue of that, right?
Yeah.
When I did the trades? Perfect. The floppies. Anyway.
Is that how it really works?
Yeah, you guys have been supporters of it forever. And if you check this out, there is a pizza shop referenced in here.
Where's the real artist?
Uh-huh. See, this is where the pizza sign was, behind here, but it got covered by words.
What?
I know. It says pizza, but at least it says pizza.
You told me.
So, I know.
Then what is that? Now you owe me.
I love these people. I never put salt on food. When people give me food, like if I'm at someone's house, that's a surefire way to insult somebody, right?
Yeah.
That same mentality carries over here. With even just doing work for people, you have to. I'm an okay artist, okay writer. A lot of it is selling myself, and I think that sort of salesmanship is dead in the world. People just expect, oh no, I'm a great artist, you have to buy my work, and no one talks to anybody. You'll see there's a lot of people who aren't talking to people. And that's where it's lacking. I love to draw. I love to make people smile. If I don't have a queue of things I'm writing for or drawing for, I will draw for kids for free on the spot. I drew a Beast Boy earlier. It was fantastic. Kid's like four, right? He's carrying on a Beast Boy toy. And I was like, do you want a picture?
He's
like,
yeah.
The dad wanted it more than the kid did.
Right.
But that's cool. And it's engaging with those younger kids that's going to get them to want to come to conventions in the future. Or maybe they're the next great artist. Maybe they're the next great writer. Maybe they're the next... Yes. And what's cool is that there's a lot of the artists and writers here who actually want to see people succeed. Because it's not this mentality of you're trying to take my job. It's you have stories to tell. You have art to share. This is how you do it. And that's cool. Anyway. How's it going? Doing all right? You guys having a good show? I'm sorry? So this is three friends of mine who just came by.
It smells terrible.
How are you doing?
Oh, hey, I'm doing nice to you. I was like,
I'm about, I'm about 60 pounds heavier and I have a beard than the last time I saw you. So
it's going to be Two-Face, the Punisher, and then Tina from Bob's Burgers. Yeah, they none of them work with a set series, so they were like wrestling.
Yesterday, so there was like some really
that's gonna be awesome. Good stuff today too.
Yeah, really I don't know what they're doing. They were all there. I was here last year.
Right on.
Pretty good.
Just wandering around now.
Yeah, she's asleep, so. Oh.
If you guys have any questions, let me know. All right. This is a book that I write and illustrate. Your posters from. You want a poster? If not, I'm not offended. Would you like a poster? Yeah, please take one of these. These ones are the takeaways.
Yeah, right.
Please help us. Yeah, help. Yeah, my pleasure, man.
Genius.
Those ones aren't free though. I'm just messing with it. It's just a thicker cardstock.
So I'm actually not with him. Print. I'm with him, but we're recording clips for our podcast. So we just released our 10th episode.
Yeah. I guess have a good call.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we figured we'd bring the mic and talk to people.
I am local. People.
Yeah, yeah, see what's up.
Yeah.
So far,
him. We just sat down for 25. Sketches on just Bristol on 20.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
That's really cool.
That's really
cool.
Yeah, it's like
those are kind of any more wrestling.
It's pretty awesome.
Do you want to come back in like 10 minutes and introduce us?
Yeah.
Cool.
Okay. We'll finish here and then we'll.
Yeah.
Oh,
okay.
Well, that's cool.
Well, that'll be kind of cool.
Yeah.
Think about it.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, please do.
Oh, sweet.
She's pretty well known in the community.
Oh, good to know. Cool.
When did you start drawing?
As soon as I was. I want to say that thing of like as soon as I was born. I was born with a pencil in my hand. But I drew on everything, and like I remember when my oldest, she was drawing on the wall, and I called my dad, and I was complaining about like, oh my gosh, you know, she drew all over the wall, and he starts laughing at me on the phone because I drew on everything, and it was that thing that kept me focused. I had a hard time paying attention in class growing up, and I'm deaf in my left ear, so I kind of have to hone in the things I'm listening to, and so in the classroom, I would position myself in a way that I could hear, but also by drawing, it helped me focus.
Yeah.
I was able to tune out everything else and zone in. And so that's a huge part of it. Yeah. So, yeah, just drawing. Always drawing. I remember... Okay. Sorry. No, you please.
I was going to say, when did you decide to make this book?
This The Born Hope?
Yeah. You want to hold it?
Yeah, sure. So I wanted to tell a story. A fun story. Something to do with human struggles and something with like a supernatural element. The appeal of things like The Walking Dead is that it's not even about the zombies. It's about the people and the different groups and things like that. And dealing with emotions, like real emotions that people go through. So in this like story, we're dealing with loss, like losing loved ones, losing faith in humanity. Just, it's constantly, how we deal with things, how you, your outlook on things can take effect. And with the supernatural element, I mean, yeah, there's that fear of like a demon around every corner or running from the fiends. And, like the fiends themselves, they represent like sins and darkness and evil and things like that. And the people are trying to continually run from them, and they, you know, eventually they're overrun by it and they're devoured and things like that. So it's also about trying to maintain a sense of goodness in the world while there's a lot of dark stuff going on. Exactly. Yeah, and that's why it's all underground, too, for the most part, especially in Volume 1. It's underground. Yeah.
Cool. So I want to talk to you about getting published and how, like, you went about that. It's just because so many people, that's kind of the point where they stop. You know, they have all these ideas and then they don't necessarily know where they're going to go with those and how they can put those out into the world. And you've managed to do it on a super indie level.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people, they're like, oh, you know, Boom or IDW, those are kind of your independent more
you
labels. But really, but Boom is,
Boom still has a ton of Cartoon Network IPs and, you know, IDW and Image. Those are still major corporations, whether they're, you know, not the big, you know, DC Marvel powerhouses or not. So you went about doing this in a very, very independent way. Can you kind of talk about how you found that and all that?
Absolutely, absolutely. This is something that I love. I'm actually really glad you asked about this. Yeah, the only thing that's going to stop you is you. And you have to get that in your head. You also have to realize that your first try is not going to be perfect. You have to be able to accept failure with certain aspects. You have to realize you're not going to be able to do it completely on your own, even though you have to rely on yourself. So have your friends proofread things. Have your friends look at pictures. Gauge people's interest. If you're not passionate about something, no one else is going to be passionate about it. Right? You have to be able to sell it. You have to be able to... 25. Sorry, I had to make a sale. Yeah, you have to be able to sell. And you have to be... You have to. And don't price yourself out of things. So I try to be as transparent with my production things with people who genuinely want to know. So you asked, so I'm going to tell you. So I did a Kickstarter for The War and Hope Volume 1. It's 5 issues of my book. So I was doing the book as a floppy for each issue. It would cost me around $3 to print each copy. And then you sell that for 5. That's a $2 profit, but that's nothing because you have to factor in all the cost. It doesn't sustain itself. So you have to find a way for it to sustain yourself, to sustain the comic. And so, sorry, I say a lot. No, it's all good. It's real. It's me thinking. But like my editor's walking around right now in front of us. He's someone that I trust with words, who trusts his keen eye. He's not a yes man. You don't need yes men or yes women or any gender or whatever. Yes peoples. You need people who are going to look at things critically for you. So when I submit my story to him, each section of it, he tells me, okay, this one works. Or he's one time said, I don't understand what's happening. I really don't understand what's happening here. And so I can fix that. Because it may make sense in my head, but if it doesn't make sense to somebody who's casually observing it, they're going to have no idea what's going on. So with the Kickstarter. So you set your goals. Make sure you give yourself some padded room for it. You put yourself in a padded room. No, give yourself some padding with money too, because there's like shipping will kill you. Let's see. So printing, you're probably gonna have to go out of the country to make it worthwhile. So my stuff's printed in Korea. They never said north or south. It said Korea. So I had this worry that all like, but kind of like an excitement of, oh, I wonder if all my books are gonna come back with Kim Jong-un's face on everybody, and like he's the new right. Like my name's blacked out and it's just his name. That didn't happen, which is good. I would have charged more for him if that's the case. Yeah, absolutely. Copyright your stuff. That's important too. So you go to, the government site. I can't remember what it's called. And then there's a bunch of T-Rexes walking by. It's lovely. Get it done. It's like $80 usually to trademark like an intellectual property. Do that. That whole thing of envelopes, you mail it to yourself so it's postmarked, that only goes so far. Let's see what else. Oh, so printing. So find a way that you can actually make money off your stuff so it sustains itself. So all my art actually sustains itself, and I don't pull anything from my wife's job or my job, my day job, because I have kids to feed. And so by making my art sustain itself, I hustle more with my art. But I also don't get offended. That's another thing. So I'm all over the place right now, but this is important. We talked about this yesterday on a panel. Don't get offended if someone doesn't like your stuff, because there's things I don't like out there. Why should I expect everybody to like my stuff? My comics are aimed at 16-year-old me. That's my demographic, 16-year-old me.
That's kind of who we talk to, 16-year-old us.
Yeah. Right. Well, that's who's in your head constantly, right? I mean...
He never left. I don't know why. I wish he would just go. Like, take a break, man. I need to be able to function at a workplace.
Right. So making, you have to make it yourself. No one's going to make it for you. And these these bigger name things, like you mentioned Boom and IDW, it's you know your contracts too. Look at stuff like that. I've not had any proposition from big people, but I'm not making it for them. I'm making it for me. If they were to come at me with a contract, I would consider it. But then once you do stuff like that, I think this may be wrong information, but IDW, if you sign with them, I believe they get the rights to films and to television.
Yes, I know different companies have different stipulations for their contracts. Where
yeah, in the 90s, a lot of people actually left several of the bigger companies because they weren't retaining rights to their new characters. Dave and I talked about this.
Yeah, exactly.
So Dave and I talked about that a while back, in that it's kind of this idea that if I'm going to bring in a new toy, I shouldn't have to leave it in your toy box, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
I should still be able to take it home at the end of the day. And so that's why a lot of these characters up until about 5 years ago just weren't being pumped out. There weren't a lot of new characters being brought into some of those bigger universes because it wasn't worth it for a lot of writers to do that. They can put those characters on smaller labels.
Yeah.
So you're still kind of figuring out where you're going to go when that time comes.
I'm learning something new every time.
Okay.
Cool. And something new with the process. And you have to have that growth mindset. That growth mindset's a big thing in the.
You're always learning. You're always trying to figure out whatever's going on, what can make it easier, what can make it better.
So, you have to continually learn. And the second you stop learning, you're an idiot. No, really, it's like the shark thing. If a shark stops moving, it dies. Yeah. And that's the same thing with making books or writing books, drawing books. You have to continually learn. Find yourself around people who are better than you and learn from them. Russell Nolte, who's over here, he's with Wannabe Press. He had a podcast for a while called The Business of Art, I think is what it's called. And it has been instrumental in helping me. He just ended it. It's no longer going, but he's going to keep him around. Anyway, this guy's information has been gold to me. He's the one that told me your price points for your books suck, and you're not going to be able to sustain with that. And he's right. He's dead right. So now I like do the trade paperback. You bundle things, put things together. People buy my book, they get a poster and some stickers too. People like that. People like free stuff. Right? I mean, it's whatever you can do to, well, for me, it's making people smile too. That's the big thing, is it's such a wonderful thing where you can make people appreciate what's going on, make people appreciate your art. I draw until people smile. So I will work on a character because I'm one of those people that if I could put all day into a drawing, I would.
Oh yeah.
But at a convention, if you're doing that, you're shooting yourself in the foot. So if you're an artist that's looking at making money at conventions, draw until the person smiles, because that's when you know you're done. You're not finished, right? Because technically, you're never finished. But yeah, but you can be at a point where you can stop, and that's important. You need to know when to stop. Yeah.
Cool. Last question from Ryan. You got anything for him?
No.
Anything to ask?
Do you have anything to ask?
I don't.
All right, then. I think
we're good.
Cool.
Thanks. Say your name and all that.
Scott Fuzzy Joseph. You can find me at Fuzzy Joseph on Instagram, Twitter, the Facebooks, pretty much any social media. If you look up Fuzzy Joseph, I'm there.
So after we met up with Fuzzy, we went and we talked to another independent artist,
Nicole Goo and David Baker.
She was part of a couple. Actually, the two of them worked together.
Oh, yeah?
And he did some art on her stuff.
He writes and she arts, or?
Kind of. I think they went back and forth. Yeah. And they were really, she was really cool. She had a lot to say. She was also self-published, but he had a little bit better connections than, say, Fuzzy might, being that Fuzzy's, you know.
Brand new.
Being that Fuzzy's brand new and out here in Bakersfield. But she had come down from Los Angeles and has, he's got a lot of connections with that. She's kind of that example of who you know.
It seems like couples who are in the comic game are becoming more and more common.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like you've got Amanda Connor and Jimmy Palmiotti, writers and artists, Colleen Coover and Paul Tobin. Paul writes. He's done a lot of stuff for Marvel. Colleen is an artist, and she's fabulous.
Really?
And those are just two off the top of my head. If I took if I had the time to kick it around in my brain more, I could come up with easily a half dozen or a dozen others.
Yeah, the one that comes to my mind immediately isn't in comics, it's in cartoons, mm-hmm. but Rebecca Sugar and Ian Jones-Cordy, Rebecca Sugar and Ian Jones-Cordy are...
Steven Universe, right?
Rebecca Sugar made Steven Universe, but she had started working on that ages ago, back when she was working on Adventure Time. Oh. And Ian Jones-Cordy made OKKO. Okay. Their currency is like fighting. That's how they handle stuff.
Like it is. Yeah. Sure.
So, but OKKO was Ian's show and Steven Universe was Rebecca's show. And they both kind of agreed together that whoever got their show first, they would help get the other show up afterwards. And nice. Sure enough, that's how it ended up. Steven Universe got the green light. And then within 3-4 years, OKKO is on there. Both doing incredibly well. Comic-Con, San Diego Comic-Con had a whole OKKO themed booth.
Really?
Yeah, their whole booth was like the store that OKKO took place in. So this couple thing seems to be working out very well in terms of having the support.
It can be. From what I understand, it can also bring its share of difficulties. Evan Dorkin and Sarah Dyer is another couple that comes to my mind. Evan Dorkin does Milk and Cheese, and Sarah has done comics. They also did a lot of work for the DC animated stuff.
Oh, cool.
They wrote an episode of the Superman animated series. Huh.
I loved that show when I was a kid.
Yes, it's such a great show. But anyway, it seems that that both spouses as creators can be either, hey, we're going to double our efforts and double our successes. It can also be double the stress. You know? Yeah,
now you're working on two shows simultaneously.
Or alternatively, you're trying to get two sets of careers on track.
Right.
You know, neither of which comes with its own health insurance, for example.
Yeah.
You know, which can be a whole, part of that set of stresses.
Yeah. Well, here's how Nicole Gu and David Baker handle it.
Welcome to the show.
All right, that works.
I just needed you to say that. Cool.
All right. Cool. Thanks, man. Thank you, guys. I hope I didn't ramble too much.
No, you rambled entirely perfectly.
Yeah. I like to talk.
Not more than we usually do.
Nope.
Fit right in.
And that's a cut. Check, check, check. Perfect. Okay, we're talking about this volume, if that's all right with you. Okay, cool. So go ahead and just give me your name and
I'm Nicole Gu. I make comics, namely Fuck Off Squad, Murders, Fever Coast. Do some work on Action Hospital, and I just did a story writing and drawing for Gem and the Holograms.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
How long have you been doing this?
Been doing it for about 2.5 years, something like that.
Mm-hmm. Were you originally self-published?
Yeah, we're still self-published, except for my Gem story.
Okay.
Everything we make, my partner Dave Baker and I do together.
Okay, cool.
Basically.
And then, when did you start actually publishing?
So probably like 2 years ago.
So you just jumped right in.
Well, Dave's been making comics for probably 10 years, something like that. And when we started making comics together, it was very quickly after that we started self-publishing.
Cool. Is there anything about it that you wish was different in regards to self-publishing?
I mean, being able to distribute the books would be nice because Diamond distribution is so hard to get in, and there's minimums to make and those kinds of things. Being able to have books in shops all over the country would be amazing, but it's hard to do when you ship stuff yourself and need to contact every shop.
So do you have any recommendations for how to kind of circumvent that process to make it a little bit easier?
To get into shops across the country? Not necessarily as a self-publisher, because you kind of just need to get a list of shops who are open to indie content and talk to those, the owners of those shops individually. Yeah, I mean, it always helps to be at every show, talk to every shop. Yeah.
How did you jump right into going to these shows?
Yeah. Basically, after I made my first, mini comic, we started tabling with that. And I've been tabling ever since. So, yeah.
So this is your life now?
Yeah, kind of.
That's really
cool.
I
spend a lot of time at shows. Most of my friends are from shows and live across country.
So if you're going to go into independent publishing and doing your own work, self-publishing and self-distribution specifically, you really kind of have to do the show.
I think there are ways to do it, but if you really want to make connections, the comics industry is so small anyway that if you're at every show, people are going to know you. And it's about being part of the ecosystem and seeing the same faces over and over again. And yeah, it's super helpful to just be around people.
So this is Bakersfield Comic Con. Is there anything special about this one that you particularly like or dislike?
I like, for us, I live in LA, so it's sort of local, which is super nice. And then also, I think it's really cool to, like, Bakersfield's kind of out here, but to see all these people come, you know, with their homemade cosplays and not, that are really excited because this is an underserviced area in terms of, you know, comics and shows and stuff like that. So to see those people who are, like, really passionate and this is their opportunity to express that, I think is super nice.
So it only happened once in my entire life, but there came a point where somebody drew my characters and stopped. You know, fan art?
I've gotten like one or two fan art pieces and it's like the best thing ever. Yeah, it's super satisfying. Like, yeah, and we also in the last book that I just put out, which came out last week, and actually it's called Fever Coast. It's the third book of our Fuck Off Squad series. We had some friends do pinups for it, so I got to see that, which was really cool.
Right on. So, how long do you think it'll be before you start seeing cosplays of your character?
I don't know. That's like the dream, to see someone walking around as Jimmy or one of the other characters. It would be pretty great, but I don't know when or if that'll happen.
I look forward to you telling us all about it. Okay, so what's your next con?
We're doing East Bay Alternative Book and Zine Fair, I believe. It's EBABS up in Berkeley on December 9th and 10th, I believe it is.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, you're welcome.
So after we talked with her, we interviewed Josh Rhodes, who is a partial owner of Silver Wolf Comics and Collectibles.
Here in Bakersfield.
Here in Bakersfield, locally owned. And they've been working on getting a shop off the ground since long before they actually did it. They were just a con-exclusive booth for a while.
I remember when Josh is the son, right?
Yes.
I remember when Josh's parents had shown up to San Diego while I was working for my friend Steve Wyatt, and they were picking his brain about the challenges of opening a brick and mortar physical space, because Steve used to own a store up in Sacramento before he went exclusively the itinerant comic book slinger from show to show.
Which is fascinating to me because I didn't even realize that that was a thing, that people exclusively sell wares at cons. And I met several people at Bakersfield Comic Con this year who said that they did not have a brick and mortar business. Mm-hmm. They just went from con to con to con and sold their wares. And I don't even know that they had a fully functioning online store at that point.
A number of them don't. Like Steve, who does, you know, WonderCon and San Diego and a couple other shows, does not have an online presence.
Yeah.
When he's not doing shows, he's restocking the boxes, you know, pricing and grading and all that sort of thing. He doesn't really have time for online orders. Plus, he also is a show promoter. He puts on several shows, including the Bakersfield Comic Con, including Bake Anime, the Bakersfield Anime Convention. He's also involved in the Silicon Valley show.
Oh, cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah. And he works at the SAC Anime, you know, and he puts on one in Reno. It's either Reno or Lake Tahoe. I think it was Reno.
Same.
And he puts on the Mouse Con up in the Bay Area.
Yeah.
So, you know, a Disneyland or a Disneyana convention. So he's got a lot of irons in the fire and doesn't really have time to manage an online store.
That's a whole, and at that point, you're kind of running a brick and mortar store where all of your orders now have to just come in electronically.
Yeah.
You know, and while that
But you don't have the same overhead as a brick and mortar store.
Certainly. Well, so Josh and Dusty, they started off as just a couple of people selling their wares in a booth. Now they have one of the biggest booths in Bakersfield Comic Con, which is really cool. I mean, for a con that only costs you $8 to get in, having the biggest booth there isn't necessarily a massive accomplishment on the grand scope of cons. But in the scope of it being a hometown con, they're doing pretty well for themselves.
Well, and I think that's really cool. For the hometown con, I think you got to go big.
Yeah.
You know, you have to make sure that your name stays out there. because most of the folks coming to the Bakersfield show are locals.
Yeah.
And a lot of them may not know that there's someone here who can meet their fan boy and girl needs.
Yeah. Last night I was talking to my friend Logan about this, about how Bakersfield's a really nice place in that you can have a day-to-day job that can both support a decent living as well as give you time to enjoy your hobby. Mm-hmm. You know, in a place like Los Angeles, you kind of have to make your hobby part of your job or you're not going to have the time to spend on it. You know, when I'm out there, I know I'm working as much as I physically can. I don't really have time to do all the other stuff that's going on. That's why I've kind of turned this podcast into a work of love for me, because I treat it as if it's partially a job, and I treat my promotion of it as part of that, because you have to have something that's also, you know, generating income, which is not the case with this podcast right now.
Yet.
Hopefully. But it's nice that out in Bakersfield, you know, there's time to, you can work a job and still enjoy your hobbies. And I don't know that the whole town is fully aware of how big this community is until something like the Bakersfield Comic Con comes along, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
So Dusty and Josh, we interviewed Josh. He is the he's partial owner of Silver Wolf Comics and Collectibles. And here's his shtick.
Hi, I'm Josh.
And Josh, what do you do?
I'm one of the owners of Silver Wolf Comics and Collectibles over in Bakersfield, California.
All right. And how long have you guys been open?
We've been open for 3.5 years.
Nice. And do you guys do shows a lot?
Yes, we usually try to do all the local stuff just to help advertise it and always support the local cons as much as we can.
Do you do any cons a little further away, like WonderCon?
WonderCon, some of those ones, not really. We have done Tulare Sci-Fi Con, but they are not having that con currently this year.
Okay. So you kind of stick close to home then. Yeah. All right. So, but you've been to Comic-Con, and you've been to the other big ones.
Comic-Con, WonderCon, the one in Las Vegas. Usually I try to do as much on the West Coast just to try them out.
So you guys have been open for 3.5 years. You've got a pretty good stride. You just got a new building.
Yes,
right?
We just relocated across the street over by Baja Fresh and High Sushi, which is off of Hageman Callaway. Okay. And the building's a little over 200 square feet bigger, and it's just a lot nicer.
It's a nice spot.
Yeah.
So now that you guys have kind of got your stride, I'm sure you guys had, you know, kind of easier times in some places and harder times in others where you had to learn a lot. What do you think what were like the top three things you learned that were like really, really helpful that you kind of had not necessarily known and gotten in the way in the beginning?
At the beginning, a lot of the game stuff I did not know, and with a lot of the local stores, they've really caught me up to speed and stuff like that. So that was a big learning curve for me. And by going to the shows like the trade shows like Gamma and stuff like that, that would teach me even more stuff. That was a lot of more information.
So you went to a trade show and like took classes on how to run a comic book shop then?
Not just comic, they covered everything from comic books, trading cards, just pretty much anything business-wise. They focus heavily on the gaming side of stuff, but they kind of cover everything. And by doing that, it opened us up and taught us a lot of the mistakes we were making, and luckily it wasn't too late to fix those mistakes.
So there were mistakes you were making you didn't know were even mistakes?
Oh, yeah, just a whole bunch of those little tiny things that you just overlook and don't realize you're making until later on down the line. Or when it's too late, and you're like, oh, I could have done that better, or until someone shows you what you could have done better.
Okay. So, do you have any examples of some of these mistakes might have been?
Off the top of my head, no, I'm really tired from today.
So you have the big old booth here. Like, you have one of the bigger booths, which is awesome, looks like.
We started small.
Yeah.
We started literally with one table. That was actually 5 years ago. That was back at... Or is it more than five? We're at the 10th con?
We're at the 10th now.
5, 4.
So you guys had a table before you had a store?
Yes.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
It was Steve's, or it was the Bakersfield Comic Con 3rd con is when I got one table.
That was 7 years ago.
So you guys started small. You guys are big now. It looks like you guys have more... collectibles going. Is there any like big ticket items that are going? Like, what are people buying?
Usually it varies on different prices, but usually the high end stuff don't take over as fast.
Well, yeah. Well, what's big right now for you?
And comic-wise, Dark Knight Metal.
Yeah.
Are you selling more comics or
collectibles? 50-50.
Okay.
Right now, it's collectibles have picked up a little bit, but we're right around the corner from Christmas, so Christmas time, toys, figures, statues. They've actually been slowing down. Yeah. In the past 3 months, I've noticed a slight drop. Not a crazy drop, just a slight. But that's to be expected because they kept going up and up and up, and you can only go so high before it has to have a flat line.
Yeah, you're going to plateau. What's the best part about having your own comic book shop?
Truthfully, just meeting all different people and getting to know people outside and who else is interested in all these different things you're interested in, and having these conversations, which are just fun to have.
Yeah.
And just pretty much nerding out with people.
That's why I got a podcast.
Yeah, hey. That's why we started.
Perfect. Yeah. Cool. So you own this store. You own it partially with your dad, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And so you're working with your dad every day.
Yeah.
But you're working with your dad on a geek thing. I think a lot of us kind of discovered our geek from older relatives who had kind of inducted us into this. I know Dave's kids, who is regularly on our podcast.
Right here.
Like, stand right here. Say hi.
Hi.
Yeah. You know, so when you kind of realized that you and your dad were not only both really passionate about this kind of geek culture stuff, but actually could make it your day-to-day life, was that, like, surreal? When did it kind of set in as reality?
Well, I knew he always wanted to own a comic book shop, and he tried to do it throughout the garage and doing stuff like that back when he was actually still in the sheriff's department back in 90... somewhere in the 90s. I was too young to really remember. But that way. And then when my mom got sick with cancer and stuff like that, he just had to cancel it all, stop all that stuff. And I've always been passionate about comics and pretty much anything geeky, nerdy, from video games to comics to toys and everything. So we both were talking one day. I was like, well, why don't we try to open it? And that's when we started selling at the con, slowly going up like that. And then when we started to realize with the con what we wanted to do with the shop, stuff like that, that's when we started having the flyers asking people what do they want to see in a comic book shop. And that's where I got the anime stuff, where people are like, oh, I want some gaming stuff there.
So it's really curtailed to the community.
Yeah, and with the community almost for like 4 years at the con, or about 3 to 4 years, telling us what they wanted to see at a comic book shop, we got the information. That's when I started looking for contacts for anime distributors, for different distributors to try to bring them in and carry that product that people were really wanting.
Well, thank you, Josh, from Silver Wolf Comics and Collectibles. I really, really appreciate your time today. Is there anything else that you want our podcast to know for now?
Bryce is awesome.
Oh, wow.
Brian's awesome, too.
You have to pay him to say that.
Here's 20 bucks. All right, thanks. You really appreciate it. No problem.
So that was Bakersfield Comic Con. What was your favorite part of the whole con?
My favorite part of the con was taking my kids to the show. Spencer has had his con mitzvah at WonderCon. Morgan's going to get her shot at the big show this spring. Nate is only 10, so he's still got a few years to go. But I like giving them the kind of the bite-sized experience that they get here.
Certainly.
It's, you know, things that they've never seen before, you know, but it's not...
overwhelming.
Overwhelming, yeah. That's a good way to put it. Yeah. So I liked being able to take the kids to that. We all left with something that we wanted.
Cool.
You know, and I did not have to spend an arm and a leg to do it.
Yeah, that's something really nice about especially about a lot of small cons.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was really cool how many of these stores were selling stuff that really doesn't make it to big cons. You know, old action figures, the Star Trek phaser from the mm-hmm. Next Generation series. You know, that was a toy I had when I was a kid.
Right.
Seeing it in its original box up there
mm-hmm.
was really cool. I don't know that I'd necessarily see that in a booth that has to pay SDCC
right.
funds.
Well, and that's the one of the nice things about these smaller shows. You know, at a place like San Diego or the New York Comic Con or C2E2, the one in Chicago, those are high overhead shows. You really got to sell the crap out of what you bring. So
yeah.
So you're kind of limited. Or, you know, because
two for a dollar, you know, 80s novels aren't
right.
really an option for
exactly.
you.
Exactly. You know, whereas for a show like Bakersfield with a low table cost, you're going to get you're going to get people who have all sorts of stuff to sell. Yeah. Like, you don't see dollar boxes at San Diego anymore.
No.
Because the economics of a big show like that has forced that stuff out. You can't afford to sell your dollar books at San Diego anymore.
It's become more of a publication like E3 kind of situation where really the journalists are the ones who benefit from San Diego.
Well, I don't know that that's necessarily the case. I mean, there's still a convention there.
Sure. And a community.
You will get, and I've said this to people before, because the complaint I hear a lot as someone who works at a booth that sells comics at San Diego is, well, it's not Comic-Con anymore.
Yeah, but you know, only get in what you put in.
Exactly. You can find whatever experience you're looking for. A lot of people come for the movie stuff and the video game stuff, but there's still a Comic-Con there if you look for it.
Yeah.
There are still comic artists slinging an original art and willing to do sketches for you, things like that. There are still people selling comics from a variety of ages, you know, from the Golden Age up through this week's books.
Yeah.
You just got to look for it.
And that's, you know, that's one of the nice parts about, I think, all cons. For me and Brian, especially, this was the first con we've ever gone to as the podcast.
You need to make shirts.
We do. We wanted shirts, actually. We were trying to get shirts and cards. And I went to a guy and he said that my design was too complicated because our logo is just a little, it's got one too many colors in it. And so I have to go online to get them. But I do want to eventually have shirts that I can give away and I can, you know, tell people. But this is a nice place for us to kind of see where we needed to go. And we found our stride, I think, by the end of the day as to what we wanted and what we were trying to get out of it. So it was a good one. I think next one we're going to try to go to is going to be Pasadena.
The toy and comic show?
No, the actual Pasadena Comic Con is in January.
I didn't know there was a Pasadena Comic Con.
I didn't either, but there was a poster for it at Bakersfield Comic Con.
Did you get a flyer?
I didn't, but...
Did you take a picture of the poster?
No, I will use the internet.
Okay. This is a podcast, and for those of you listening at home, you can't see Dave shaking his head in disdain at Shaba's lack of initiative in acquiring information about this Pasadena Comic-Con.
The internet exists. Anyway, no, I didn't get the pictures of the flyer. I see you shaking your head, but I will look it up and I'll get the information and we'll put it on that we're going out there as well. I think we're about at the point where we need to start, you know, thinking of having a website and stuff. But this Comic-Con kind of gave us an idea of where we stand in a lot of this stuff.
I'm telling you, if you do a Patreon, Jazz Hands on a coffee cup.
Maybe we can try to get one of those holographic ones that kind of turns a little bit.
Ooh, lenticular is the word you're looking for.
Is that what it's called?
Yes.
All right, ladies and gentlemen.
Ooh.
Oh.
Foam jazz hands.
Foam. They just put them on little springs, so they just...
Well, no, like when you go to a sporting event and you got the foam fingers, you know, we're number one. Foam jazz hands.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for listening this week.
It's been a pleasure.
Bye now.